From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland.
I'm from East Oakland.
I live on Belvedere Street, two blocks up from Haight.
I'm from the Sunset.
A foggy inner sunset.
I live in the Mish.
Coming up, what happens when young children take on the complications of gentrification with a musical.
Soon, this beautiful city will belong to Scraper Advertising and ICU Technologies.
Then H.P. Mendoza talks about being an Asian filmmaker and the 10th anniversary of his film, Colma, the musical.
Like 5 minutes out the here full of dead people, Colma. Dead people fog in auto dealerships. Yeah, that place.
The hills are alive with the sounds of the bay. Today on Cross Currents, stay with us. There are hip-hop musicals about founding fathers.
What's your name, man?
Alexander Hamilton. My name is Alexander Hamilton.
Hello, Hamilton. There are also musicals with singing Nazis, sort of.
Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
That one's from the producers. Well, today we're featuring musicals about the Bay Area. It's no secret that San Francisco has the most expensive rents in the country. Now, even those with high-paying tech jobs are starting to look for cheaper places to live. But rent, jobs, salaries, these are adult problems. It's not the kind of thing you'd hear kindergartners singing about. So some parents were surprised to find out that's just what their children were working on. John Mualim brings us this story from our friends at This American Life.
This past spring, we went to see the end-of-the-year musical for my daughter's after-school program at a public school in San Francisco. It was an original work, and she had a tiny part, her first play. I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't this. Act 1, Scene 1 opened on a sinister tech executive meeting with a corrupt mayor and San Francisco's Board of Supervisors. He's pitching them a new branding campaign for the city. It's meant to distract citizens from San Francisco's widening socioeconomic inequality and simmering strife. My daughter was finishing kindergarten. She was six. One elected official, played by a fifth grader, explains that everyone knows the city is struggling. A wave of tech money is driving up real estate prices and pushing people out. She describes it as a kind of civic identity crisis.
A town that was once known as a bastion of freedom, inclusion, individuality is now known as a sterile playground for the rich.
People are frustrated. They don't want to live in a sterile playground for the rich. That's why the city's called in this branding guy, a tech marketing guru named Ron Scraper, a master of his craft who could sell water to an ocean, one kid says. Scraper can't fix the city's gentrification problem, but he has cooked up a creative way to reframe it. Sure, he says, pitching his idea to the city government, no one can afford San Francisco's rental market anymore or the $100 Uber rides. But, and here's his new slogan.
San Francisco, where you can afford to dream.
The question is, can we afford this ad campaign? What's the damage?
Oh, I'm sure we can afford it. Right, Ron?
That's the mayor, a chuckling, feathery kid in an oversized suit. He loves the idea and suggests paying Ron Scraper's consulting fee by redirecting funds from city public schools and affordable housing. Suddenly, music starts. Lines of dancing third graders flood the stage. They're holding iPads made out of cardboard and glitter, and they sing about looking down on the less fortunate people from expensive homes they just bought in a formerly working-class neighborhood. I bought a sleek condo for about $5 million, right on top of Potrero Hill.
San Francisco dream.
At one point, the band slows down, and this angelically round-faced child steps into a spotlight for his solo. You can see his face, straining to find his note.
We need a ray of light to pierce that foggy sky.
This place is perfect for sunny weather.
Taking our city from behind our back.
They're taking the souls of the wild.
So there they were, these blameless children, up there performing a kind of kiddie grotesque of the same exasperated conversation that all us parents were constantly having behind their backs. The conversation that more and more seemed to hang over every conversation in San Francisco, then inevitably spiraled into panicked Zillow searches for homes in Oakland or Petaluma or Portland. The after-school program that staged the play is a nonprofit called CASA, Children's After School Arts. It was staffed in part by young artsy people, many of whom only worked there part-time and seemed to be scraping by in the city, tossed around by the same turbulence. I'd gotten to know a few of them during the year. They were cool, kind-hearted people, and my daughter loved them. But now, it felt like they were indoctrinating my little girl. I was kind of angry at them, even if I was basically sympathetic to their cause. The cost of living in San Francisco had become the greatest source of anxiety for my family in the last couple of years. We constantly wrestled with whether it was worth trying to live here anymore. But my instinct had been to shield my kids from all that stress and instability, not conscript them. I mean, the only school play I could remember being in as a kid was called Care Bears Class Show. I played a green one. The play went on. There was a scene about Google buses, a song about FOMO, and a time travel sequence with the ghosts of San Francisco past, present, and future through the gold rush and the summer of love. My daughter's kindergarten class twirled with flowers in their hair, and there was an impressive cameo by a miniature Allen Ginsberg.
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, dragging themselves through the streets at dawn. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly connection to the starry dynamo and the machinery of night.
Here's the plot, though. Spoiler alert, I guess. Ron Scraper's real client turns out to be a shadowy tech corporation plotting to build something called The Dock. Ostensibly, The Dock is a big, cool cafe with what the kids on stage keep calling top-notch, organic, hand-picked, single-sourced, locally roasted, individually dripped coffee. But actually, it's a trap. In a later scene, the executives meet to discuss their real plot in private. When San Franciscans come to The Dock and plug in their laptops or phones, the company will install malware on their devices and steal their personal data.
Soon, this beautiful city will belong to Scraper Advertising and ICU Technologies.
See, that's the name of their privacy-breaching, data-scraping tech company, ICU Technologies. As the plot unspools, of course the company has to evict someone. And it's a close-knit group of multicultural tenants from an old Victorian at 1906 Babylon Lane. The tenants line up in front of their stoop, like a row of glum rockettes, and sing the eviction blues.
They're taking the floor from under our feet. Yes, they're taking the floor from right here under our feet. We want to keep fighting, but we're already beat.
It was here, during this number, that I suddenly realized why my daughter had turned to me out of nowhere on the way home from school a couple of weeks earlier and asked whether our landlords planned to evict us. It surprised me she even knew that word.
The broken heart, I gotta move. I don't know what I'm gonna do. Eviction.
The eviction song killed. Everything killed, which was strange given something I haven't mentioned till now. Maybe half the parents in the auditorium actually worked in tech, And now they were watching their own children spear them as cartoon villains, literally cackling and throwing money over flutes of champagne as they plotted the eviction of all those nice people. No one in the audience booed, of course, or huffed or stamped out. We were watching our kids perform. But I can't imagine what it must have been like to keep smiling along as you suddenly realized that for weeks after school, your own son or daughter had been rehearsing songs that mocked both you and the job you were off busy working, which is why you'd been forced to entrust your kids to the after-school program in the first place. I later heard that one father in the tech industry had gotten wind of the play's plot and actually written to the director, expressing concern. This led to a long, explanatory email to all us parents with the subject line, "Is the Casa musical anti-tech?" The short answer is no, the director wrote. The characters are fictional exaggerations, and no one group can be blamed for San Francisco's struggles. That said, she insisted, we do not attempt to answer questions with our art, but rather to ask questions. After the eviction blues, the curtain fell on Act One. Intermission. And we all filtered into the courtyard for paella and juice boxes. A neighbor of mine who works in tech walked over, and I noticed he felt compelled to lead with a good-humored joke about how he hoped I didn't mind chatting with the enemy. I took it as his way, subconsciously at least, to show he was brushing it off. There were no hard feelings. We weren't the caricatures we'd been watching on stage. The real truth was in this interaction, him and me. And he was right. His family was wonderful. We'd spent Halloween at their place, and one night, when I sliced my finger open cooking, I'd run over, and his wife, an ER doctor, cleaned me up and assured me I wouldn't need stitches while I bled all over their kitchen sink. All that familiarity colored our conversation at intermission. And yet, I'd be lying if I said that in that moment, I wasn't also conscious of something else. That my growing family couldn't afford to rent a bigger apartment in our neighborhood. That our days were numbered. And that he, meanwhile, had recently bid up their house across the street to 25% over asking. I hated that I was thinking about that, but I was. And I hated to think that he might be thinking about it too. But at the same time, and I'm definitely not proud of this, I also hated that maybe he wasn't thinking about it, that he had the luxury not to, that as we stood there laughing off the play together, his laughter might have been unencumbered, casual laughter, and not uncomfortable laughter. Not even slightly uncomfortable. I was embarrassed to recognize all those high-pitched voices in the play, stammering their shakily memorized platitudes. They were the voices in my head.
It's all the techies' fault. Everyone was just fine before they moved in. Hey, does anyone have a phone with power? I really need to get online.
The techies are not the enemies. We are also dependent on the technological advances they have brought.
Yeah. Some of my best friends are techies.
The real enemies are selfishness and greed.
What's wrong with selfishness and greed? We all have to look out for ourselves, right?
That was last May. We don't live in San Francisco anymore. We moved a couple of months later. We still loved living in the city, but life there had started to feel impossible for us in the long term, for reasons which were apparently close enough to what was unfolding on that stage that, at some point in Act Two, my wife started to cry. We were lucky to have options. We went somewhere small, semi-rural, and far away. A place where we could afford to buy a pretty cool house and work a little less, and where the children's theater program in town is satisfied doing Mary Poppins. Sometimes up here, I think about that class play, and I can measure how long we've been gone from the Bay Area by how impossible that performance, how impossible the very idea of an elementary school musical about eviction has started to feel. When I think about it now, I don't feel the same discomfort, like I'm watching all my own agonizing worries performed in song. What I mostly feel is pride. Pride that my kid got to be a part of it. And pride that she got to live in a place where people cared so deeply about what their city should be that even children's musical theater seemed like a way to hash that question out. And they loved their city so much that inevitably they felt compelled to give their musical a happy ending. Even if it meant lacing the last act with a series of preposterous plot twists. The mayor suddenly realizes he's been duped by Scraper Advertising and ICU Technologies.
I had no idea. I would never approve such a horrible plan. The tenants of 1906 Babylon Lane will not be evicted from their home.
Even Ron Scraper comes around.
Oh, fine. Scraper Advertising and ICU Technologies will be working together to provide affordable housing to the people of San Francisco.
Woo!
San Francisco, where you can afford to live!
That's the lead-in to the play's big final number, a huge demonstration in front of San Francisco's City Hall, with the entire K-5 ensemble marching down the aisles and out of the wings. They're activists now, pouring on stage, holding signs, and singing about how they've had enough. My daughter is barely 4 feet tall, a sometimes bashful little girl who has trouble pronouncing gentrifier correctly. And on stage, just then, she was absolutely dwarfed by an older, louder kid behind her who was waving a massive placard that read, "Resistance equals love of community." Still, I'm glad to have the memory of her up there on the fringes of the resistance, mouthing the words.
That was John Moalim reporting for This American Life. This American Life is on KALW every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. While musicals about paying rent are at least as old as the musical Rent, there's only one musical ever about living in a town best known for its cemeteries. Colma is the small town on the peninsula where the Bay Area goes to bury its dead. The film, Colma the Musical, marks its 10th anniversary this year, and it's showing as part of the Asian American Film Festival, CAMFest. Creator H.P. Mendoza came by our studios to talk about the significance of the musical, being an Asian American filmmaker, and what else he has in store for festival goers this year. I asked him first what he thought about being known in the arts world as the Asian Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah, being called the Asian Stephen Sondheim, I'll take that. You know, I actually, in the book that's being released at the Asian Art Museum, I actually used two blurbs, and I made the top one, H.P. Mendoza's the Asian Stephen Sondheim. Because I thought it was kind of funny. I think it's kind of funny because there's something that I feel like the dialogue around that's kind of funny. Because I think when an Asian person says it, it's like, oh my God, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Especially when it's happening at a place that's like CAMFest at the Asian American Film Festival. But then when you see it in Variety. You know, when you read the blurb, it's like, oh, H.P. Mendoza's the Asian Stephen Sondheim, Grady Hendrix, Variety. And it's like, oh, okay, it's kind of that way. I'll never really be an American. I'll always be an Asian American. So, like, I'll be an Asian songwriter at the same time. So I find the dialogue kind of funny.
But so those two hit you in different ways.
Yeah, yeah. They hit me in different ways. I'm not going to say it's an act of reclamation. It's not like that. It's double-edged in a different way. Mm-hmm. I just kind of like the discourse that it creates.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, Asian American Film Fest, and you are celebrating 10 years since the release of Colma the Musical. So tell me a little bit about that for those who have not seen it.
Well, Colma the Musical came out.
And this is Colma, like this Colma.
Like 5 minutes out the Here Full of Dead People Colma.
Okay.
Yeah. Dead People Fog and Auto Dealerships. Yeah, that place. So Colma the Musical is it's a coming of age story about three kids growing up in Colma and not knowing what to do after they graduate from high school. On clear days, while they sit on the hills of Colma, on clear days when the fog disappears, they can see San Francisco right there. And what does that do? What does that do? And what does that mean for three lead characters who are, Filipino and Latino?
Well, let's take a listen to a clip.
New York just cleaned up Times Square. San Francisco's right over there. Los Angeles just instated a new mode of public transit. While Coma stays,
I guess it's cool we got a new police station.
Next to the police station. Coma stays.
All right, that's from Colma the Musical. With me is H.P. Mendoza. And so one of the great things about Colma the Musical is that it placed non-white characters, Asian Pacific Islanders, or, you know, in particular, at the forefront of stories that are not just about identity or ethnicity. They're just people. Mm-hmm. What's the power of that? Why?
I was kind of answering a question to somebody who was asking me why all the people who won Best Actor or Best Actress who happened to be people of color were portraying themselves as people struggling. And I said, yeah, there's this weird thing that you have to deal with where you do that. You say, yes, 12 Years a Slave is a major Oscar contender and it wins and it makes a big statement. But then you talk to a lot of people and there are a lot of people who say, oh, the movie's still on their list of movies to watch, you know? Mm-hmm. Because I think for the most part, when you see movies that are about struggle or they're about identity, regardless of what their ethnicity is, a lot of times they see it as spinach cinema, you know?
Spinach cinema. Yeah, what does that mean?
Oh, eat it. It's good for you.
Mm.
You know? Try feeding a kid spinach. So when I made Colma, if I could be completely honest, I wasn't trying to make spinach and I wasn't trying to make a cake either. The characters could have been played by anybody, but I think for me and everyone else involved and people who knew my life, it's like, well, this is sort of autobiographical. I mean, how would I feel if I actually saw, you know, the whiter, more attractive standard vision of beauty playing this, you know, this person was supposed to be me. So I think it was sort of a design principle, if you will, like that kind of stuck from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Like, no, this person's Filipino, this person's Latino, and this woman's going to be Filipino.
That's what they are.
That's what they are. Yeah. Yeah.
You're doing an event called Takeover at the Asian Art Museum.
Yes.
There's like a retro 3D showcase. There's a museum hunt. Mm-hmm. There's a live retrospective of your music and what is going on? Tell me about it.
Well, Takeover is a new series that's being kicked off by Mark Mayer at the Asian Art Museum.
It's called the H.P. Mendoza Takeover.
I know, yeah.
Did you name it that?
I didn't name it that.
That's an awesome name.
I have to think of a way to take over the museum. And on March 17th, I will be. It's going to be, there are three components to my takeover. There's Anaglyph, which is all of my 3D art and films just, you know, in one big dark room, and you have to wear your 3D glasses to view that. There's something I have designed called Super Museum Hunt, which is a scavenger hunt throughout the entire museum that kind of uses animated characters that I'm going to control you through. I'm going to control you through your smartphone. The main portion of Takeover is this thing called Mission Arcade, which is a sort of secret party I've been throwing since 2007. And the party has always been about live performances, geek art, film art, dancing, and maybe a little karaoke. So basically I get to take that and that's the entire second floor of the museum.
And what's next for you after this?
Well, I'm giving a sneak preview actually at the Takeover.
Ooh.
I mean, I have a bunch of things that I want to do at all times, right? But a lot of things get pushed around and rescheduled due to either money, time, or time and money. Both are currency. And the one that I'm focusing on next is an animated musical sci-fi fantasy about a city called Super Magic City.
Based on...
Oh, you know, a certain city. I'm a San Franciscan, and, you know, I would like to make this animated musical about this fantasy city. But it really it really is about how to survive in a city that might not be your city anymore. And I'd like to think it is a family film. And it's not spinach, but I'd like to think that it's going to touch on themes that are kind of swimming around all of our heads right now in San Francisco. Like, where do you go? I think it's a very plain question. I think like the larger question, there are granular questions like, what do you do when the arts scene is dying in San Francisco? Or artists of color, where do they display their work? But I think in general, the question for everybody is, where do you go?
All right. H.P. Mendoza, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's filmmaker H.P. Mendoza. Colma the Musical shows as part of CAMFest, the Asian American Film Festival, this Sunday, March 13th. All those details are at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. And while you're there, subscribe to our podcast. Listen to Cross Currents when and wherever you want and catch up on past episodes. You can even search our shows by subject. Find out how at kalw.org/subscribe. Our team includes Lisa Bartfi, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Angela Johnston, Truk Nguyen, James Rowlands, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Jeremy Dalmas. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by multimedia artist and composer Kim Nucci of Oakland. She's taking part in this weekend's Signal Flow event at Mills College in Oakland. She's on Friday at 8 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Babo.